Welcome to the latest edition of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. Today we're going to be reviewing the second ODI between New Zealand and Bangladesh, which took place. I've got a fantastic guest with me today. He is, well, I would describe him actually as an uber Bangladesh cricket fan. He's probably got the biggest collection of Bangladesh cricket shirts of anyone that I know of. He is, of course, the host of the hugely informative and entertaining Bangla Cricket podcast. He is Roshan Alam. Welcome, Roshan.
Thank you for having me on. Good to be here. Very tired. Probably the most delirious analysis of any match I think either of us will ever do, but here we go.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to the delirium and the slightly strange analysis that's going to ensue. Amazing that I haven't actually had you on before, but great to have you on now that you are here. Lots to discuss. I mean, on the face of it, it was quite a comfortable victory for New Zealand in the end. They won by 5 wickets, 10 balls to spare. Bangladesh batting first, having lost the toss. Got up to 271 for six. New Zealand in the end got there, as I said, relatively easily. But beneath that, there's lots to unpick and unpack. So let's start at the start of the Bangladesh innings, batting innings. And looking at the first half of that innings, I think the striking thing about it was the quite conservative way that Bangladesh approached their batting. It was quite apparent that, you know, they wanted to take the innings as deep as possible, lose as fewer wickets as possible. And I guess, you know, the reasons behind that were, of course, the last game where they basically capitulated, the batting just didn't offer much at all out for about 30 odd. I guess the question I have for you is, do you think that sort of tactic was justified? And, you know, did you think it actually worked in the end?
Yeah, I think it was justified. And actually, I think it did work as well. You know, ultimately, we got up to a very good score, 270. It could have been a match-winning score. And arguably, it should have been a match-winning score. I think off the back of the first match where, our batting completely crumbled, and there was a lot of criticism, but also Tamim Iqbal was very, very quick to say, we've got no excuse. We've played in these conditions before. There's no excuse. We can't keep using the bounce as a reason for not performing. Off the back of that, and then within 10 balls losing Litton, this innings could have very much gone the same way. And I think the boys handled it well. I think that about 4 or 5 years ago, I remember reading a lot of sort of articles around how Tamim had developed into this player who had to play for the situation. And I think to do the opposite of what happened in the first game, I think that conservative approach, seeing off the new ball, getting used to the kind of the pitch and the bounce and the pace and bedding in and having wickets in hand, I think was the right way to go about it. And I think at the sort of 30 over stage where we still had, I think it was like sort of 7 or 8 wickets in hand, felt like we were in a good position going into the sort of a match winning target.
Yeah, certainly I'd say sort of getting up to sort of that 271 in the end was a good effort. If you look at the broader context of the previous game, also the attack that they were facing, Bolt, Nichols and Jameson, all sort of top class fast bowlers, all offering slightly or giving slightly different challenges to the batsman. It's an interesting one, isn't it, in terms of Tamim's role? I think, again, this every time we sort of talk about Bangladesh cricket, or, you know, there's chat about Bangladesh cricket, I feel personally there's about 3 or 4 main kind of areas or key topics. One of them is just Shakib. Exactly. The other one seems to be, you know, captaincy, who should be the captain of the test team, who should be the captain of the one day team. And the other sort of enduring debate or narrative, I suppose, of recent times has been Tamim and his kind of role in the team. And yeah, you're right, he's definitely sort of taken on this anchor role. I've written about it. I kind of picked up on it, I think, probably around 12 months ago during that Pakistan that, well, the Pakistan tour that was a bit interrupted in the end and didn't actually finish. But I remember in one of the T20s during that series, I picked up on the fact that he was definitely playing that sort of anchor role. And yeah, I think you're right. If you look at the context of things, losing an early wicket, it certainly makes sense to try and take things deep. I think the times when I kind of struggle with the approach sometimes, and I guess critics do as well, is when the approach becomes a bit too rigid, i.e. when, you've scored maybe, I don't know, four or five runs off the first three balls of the over, and yet, in your own mind, you think, well, that's good enough. Exactly. Let's just bat out the over. And for me, that it's more about intent, really, and kind of showing positive intent and trying to maximise every scoring opportunity that you can. So, definitely sort of two sides to the story. I guess having sort of got in and got into the 70s, eventually being run out in 78 with that strike rate of 72, and he got out in the 31st over, Bangladesh were 133 for free when he got out. So at that stage, having got out, fortunately, that the innings that Mitten played was absolutely fantastic and kind of transformed the whole innings. But on another day, that kind of situation could have backfired, I guess.
Yeah, I think what sort of become one of the sort of good things about Bangladesh at the moment is that they are playing situational cricket. And actually, I think what happened quite beautifully was that Mitten took on the baton from Tamim. Now, Tamim went out at, for me, what is, people always talk about the 30th over, whatever you're on, double it. And so I genuinely believe Tamim's game plan was to carry the entire innings and carry his bat through. And obviously you have a game plan, but you also have an opposition who are trying to disrupt that. And so, his strike rate when he went out, not that impressive, but he went out at the point of the game where I believe he would have clicked through the gears. And had he been there till the 40th over, the 45th over, I think we'd be looking at a significantly healthier percentage. And his numbers and Mitten's really do contrast, but I think that's because they were playing as a team. And Mitten, sort of, when he came in, he saw where in the game he was. It was sort of, in the 30s, he saw where the score was and he knew what job he had to do. And so, hang on a second. And so I think he sort of understood what the job was, and collectively as a team, it's very easy to sort of go, well, Tamim didn't do well, Mitten did. But as Bangladesh, to get up to 271, having set a foundation, having protected their wickets, and then gone for it in the last sort of 10, 15 overs, I'd be hard-pressed to criticise, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It was a real kind of combined team performance, I'd say, to get them up to that score. I guess just the last thing on the whole Tamim debate, I guess, is what colours or what kind of skews people's thinking a little bit is because, we've all seen Tamim for like the first, 10 years of his career, and we know exactly what he's capable of. And we know, the freedom with which he can bat. And I think that does kind of play on people's minds a lot. And that certainly skews the debate, shall we say. But moving on from that then, and you did just mention it there, in terms of Mohammad Mitten's knock, I thought it was hugely impressive and as you say, hugely vitally timed, the acceleration that he played with. He was unbeaten on 73, came from 57 balls, and I thought by far and away the most fluent batting of anyone in that innings. What was your kind of appraisal of it?
Yeah, 100%. I think he's probably one of the most underrated players in the team. There's always seems to be amongst fan groups some debate about whether he should be included or not. And I think that's slightly harsh and slightly unwarranted, particularly in New Zealand, where I think the last time he was out, he scored two half centuries in 2019. So actually, here's a guy who can clearly play the conditions seemingly quite comfortably, and actually that makes him a very kind of useful asset to have in the middle order. And I think his performance today, particularly, hopefully, will give the selectors a bit of confidence to go, actually, we do have a kind of a middle order there that we can use when we're missing a big name like Shakib. I mean, I could go on for days and days about the number three position, but to have Mitten come in after Mushfiq and Raheem and someone have someone to cement the gap between Raheem and Ahmadullah was really impressive. And actually, I genuinely believe he's actually an extremely underrated player because he looks so solid out there, and he really played well in the game, but also, like I said, took the baton on from Tamim and the situation the team were in and where they needed to get to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was hugely impressed with his innings. I mean, I hadn't seen him play as well as that. I mean, it was his high scoring ODIs. I've always, I guess, maybe slightly unfairly viewed him as a bit of a, you know, as a bit of a stopgap kind of player, someone who's generally never really in the team for more than sort of 2-3 games. at a time. And I wrote about this earlier, I guess my perception of him has always been he's kind of one of these in-between players, so he's not quite that golden generation, he's not, you know, that Aqib, Tamim, Mushfiq kind of generation, and then he's not really part of the sort of younger set of players in their sort of 20s, if you like, who are coming through. He's kind of somewhere in the middle, he's 30, and he's been around a little while, but not really sort of stamped his authority on the team as such. So I've always sort of seen him as a slightly, maybe even a misfit. So as you were saying, I was really, really kind of happy to see him and glad to see him play so well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Bangladesh are going to rely on players like him because in terms of the pipeline, we had this golden generation of your Tamims, your Shakibs, and then we've got this kind of newer, younger batch coming through. But actually, it's going to need the players in between, the ones who are sort of, you know, your kind of Tuskins, your Fizzes, your Mithuns. They're the ones who are going to sort of help that transition period along. And so, I'd like to see him, if the Bangladesh Cricket Board and the selectors are now showing patience as they did with Nazmul Hussain Shamto, give him a run in the team, because actually we've got a gap in that middle order potentially. And if he's willing to fill it and play to the situation, brilliant.
Definitely. No, I agree. I do hope this is kind of a turning point, maybe for his career, and that, like you say, he's given more sort of consistent opportunities going forward. I mean, one thing that particularly impressed me, and, you know, as you were saying, sort of watching a little bit bleary-eyed sort of early hours in the morning, but one of the things that particularly interested me about his knock was just the confidence that he seemed to exude from the get-go. And one of the things I picked up, and I don't know if you noticed this, quite early on in the innings, he played a reverse sweep against the spinner, against Mitchell Santner. Mm. And as soon as he played it, he just stood up and didn't even make any attempt to kind of even pretend to jog a single. Because, you know, he just stood up. He saw where the ball was going and then he just stood up. And, you know, he knew it was four. And it was interesting. When I was watching that, maybe sort of half asleep, I was thinking, well, that's a bit of a, not the most professional kind of thing to do, you know, even if it's going for a four, you know, you should just kind of run just in case it doesn't, for whatever reason. But, but then actually what I realised was that it was just an exhibition of his confidence, really. It's just illustrative of just how not only confident but how focused he was. You could kind of see from all the shots that he was playing, from the control as well, that he showed, particularly off, you know, the quicker bowls. He wasn't daunted by people like by Bolt or any of the other quicks. He was kind of taking them on a little bit, which again was fantastic to see.
And his teamwork was brilliant as well. He was the backbone of the innings for me. You know, a big partnership with Mushfiq, a big partnership with Ahmadullah. He scored more runs than both of those in those partnerships. He yet still rotated the strike. He batted with the tail. I was just so impressed by him. I think where Bangladesh were often criticised for not winning regularly abroad, I think he could be the answer for that middle order. Because I think at times we question about who falls in the slots around those big players, or even who will replace those big players. And on the basis of today, and obviously sort of cautioning myself not to get too carried away, because as we know, with the Bangladesh cricket team, you're only a couple of performances away from being dropped. But on the evidence of today, we saw a really mature performance of the player who took risks and did so with confidence, like you say. And that, for me, was extremely impressive. And I think we'll have silenced a lot of his doubters.
He was certainly a big plus for Bangladesh today. So moving on then, as we said, Bangladesh got up to 271 in that batting innings setting. New Zealand, not an inconsiderable 272 for victory. So early stages of that New Zealand batting innings, they actually lost a couple of quick wickets, and they were actually three down for 53 runs after the 11th over. So I felt kind of throughout that sort of first 20, even 30 overs of the New Zealand innings, they never really properly got away from Bangladesh in terms of, you know, their scoring rate was always kind of there or thereabouts. They were always kind of just above the asking rate, but they never massively got away. But I think really the whole innings and I think the whole game kind of hinged on, well, I think three overs of that New Zealand innings. So overs 36, 37, 38. I described it earlier when I wrote about it as 15 minutes of madness. I'm going to start on the 36th over. So it was Tuskin Ahmed who was bowling, who I thought bowled reasonably well, a little bit erratic in his first spell, but still he was bowling with decent pace and you know, a good amount of aggression as well, I thought. So first ball of that 36 over, slants a nice ball across Nishan, who basically prods at it, edges behind. You'd think 90 times, maybe even 95 times out of 100, Mushafiq would take that catch. He did have to dive slightly to his left, I think it was. Fairly low, but I mean, even then, I think, well, you know, that really is, you know, for someone like him who's been around for so long, really was a regulation catch. But as we know, he spilled it. And then, as we all know, the very next over, Mehdi Hasan, who as well had bowled really well in his first spell, bowling against the captain, Latham, who basically just chips one back to him, a dolly of a catch, and again, he drops it as well. So really, those two absolute sitters, absolute dollies, seem to, well, basically Bangladesh kind of architects of their own downfall by not holding on to those catches. Firstly, how surprised were you by seeing those drops? And then secondly, can you think of any plausible reason for two such simple catches to go down in such quick succession?
I mean, look, for me, Bangladesh should have won today. And I know there'll be some debate of whether 271 was a good enough score. I think it was. And I think when you lose a game with 10 balls remaining, people will always say, oh, you're 10-20 short. But actually, you know, that's just the nature of the game. I think New Zealand obviously played to the target. And Bangladesh have got themselves in a very, very good situation. You know, the openers got themselves, like you say, sort of, I think they were 55 for three at one point. And then the spinners came on and really choked that run rate. At one point, I think it just lofted over, the required rate was just over 6.5. And so New Zealand were on the back foot, and obviously that you know, captain's innings from Tom Latham sort of brought them back. But, I mean, the Mushfit catch, the moment it happened, I started seeing tweets about how he'd, you know, done similar against New Zealand and Williamson and stuff. And I think that's quite harsh to sort of try. And I think Mushfit is a professional scapegoat for Bangladesh fans. And everyone will go, well, there's the game. And I think that's slightly unfair, you know, because players are going to make mistakes. My only concern, I thought, my thoughts were, A, like you say, it was a regulation catch. That's the sort of catch you probably practiced in training 100, 200 times in your career. And secondly, I wonder how well-oiled he is. We've seen a lot of matches where he hasn't kept wicket, and Tom Darce has. And so I was very curious when he was behind the stumps in this way. What's the decision? Is it a test match thing? Is it a long-term thing? Is it an easing of the responsibility, and should we be rotating keepers like that? So I think that for me was a kind of initial thought. You know, Mushfiq will know more than anyone else, he should have caught that. So I wouldn't pin the game on him. Drop catches happen in matches, and he should have taken it. Absolutely. I'm more angry about what followed, if I'm honest. The drop catch, split that was hit straight back on Mahedi, and there was also one around mid-wicket, which is probably slightly more difficult to catch. But regardless, I think if as a team you're starting to switch off, nothing should wake you all up to seeing one of your teammates dropping a catch. And as soon as that misfit catch had been dropped, all the other fielding blunders that followed, there was a fumble on the boundary. I think someone, you know, tumbled over and let it for four. That for me is unacceptable. You are professional sports people. You're allowed to make mistakes. They happen. They happen in every sport at every level. But once you almost drop the game, that's the moment to go, well, hang on, let me just be alert because this is where we can throw away the game. So for me, I'm actually the most forgiving of Mushfik, not of everything else that followed, I think, because that is where, you know, let me be catching up. We should have won today. And we dropped literally the game in those three overs. And that's where it turned. And once we'd done that, there was very little time. And New Zealand just sort of eased home quite, and it was a case of just running down the runs to see how long it took them to win, as whether they would win.
Yeah, no, really good point I think you made about Mushfik, and I guess the fact that the longevity of his career, firstly, and I think the fact that if you play international cricket for 15 plus years, almost 20 years, then you're going to make mistakes. It's just the nature of the beast. So, you know, to not play for that long and not make any mistakes just isn't realistic, isn't feasible. I guess, yeah, where Mushfik or where the issue comes with Mushfik, unfortunately, is some of his mistakes are really quite high profile or crucial junctures of games. Yeah. But again, yeah, I take your point about the fact that everyone drops catches. It does happen. And actually, Tomin, interestingly, after the game, said exactly that, you know, unfortunately, drop catches are just a part of the game. You know, no one does it willingly. And actually, I did watch a bit of the India-England game straight after the New Zealand-Bangladesh game, and Myron Ali dropped an absolute sitter off Shikhar Dhawan. So, yeah, like you say, these things do happen. I guess my take on it is, I mean, the only thing I can put it down to is just poor concentration or a lack of concentration or, you know, indeed, kind of scrambled minds a little bit. So, you know, that first drop goes down. Like you say, there's a couple of kind of misfields, fumbles in the fields. Everyone's minds are a bit scrambled when actually, like you say, should be switched on. It was a hugely disappointing kind of turning point, I suppose, in the game, because actually at that point, New Zealand still had, well, at the start of the first six overs, they still had 101 runs still to get. And obviously if both of those catches had been taken, Neesham and Latham back in the pavilion, then that would have been a very tall order indeed, maybe four wickets remaining. And then just to finish that sort of 15 minutes of madness off, the 38th over, which again Tuskin came on to bowl, I did feel quite sorry for him at this point, because he'd obviously had that drop the over before. I think the first ball of his 38th over went for four leg byes, and then he conceded sort of three fours immediately after that. One of them a horrendous misfield. I can't remember who the fielder was. Someone on the boundary kind of misjudged it.
Ended up tumbled over themselves, didn't they? Yeah.
Ended up kind of hitting him on the shin and kind of skewing away to the boundary. So that over, I think, went for something like 18 or 19 runs and really did kind of seal Bangladesh's fate, I felt. But I guess you can't really conclude a review without just touching on New Zealand's performance and really the standout performance from their captain, Latham, wicketkeeper, batsman. His excellent unbeaten 110 not out. One thing again that I picked up on, I'd seen him bat a little bit obviously in the World Cup last year, but one thing that kind of amused me a little bit, it was a couple of times the camera really kind of zoomed in on his face, just as he was facing up to to play at all. It almost looked like he'd have a smirk on his face. This kind of grin would kind of spread across his face. I think it's just his way of concentrating. But it was really quite amusing and quite unusual to sort of see. But maybe it was just kind of symptomatic of just how calm and how at ease he was at the crease, because certainly that innings, apart from the drop catch, it seemed to be really commanding, a real kind of captain's knock leading from the front.
Yeah, he was playing the innings Tamim Iqbal wanted to play. You know, he came in at 55-3. He faced a very tough spell of bowling from the Bangladeshis. I think when we had Mahedi and Mahedi in tandem for a while, he saw the required run rate go to 6.5, nearly, you know, just over 6.5, almost 7 at one point. But he played the perfect captain's innings, and it's hard not to be pleased for him. You know, he's a stand-in captain. I know there've been some conversations around, you know, New Zealand's middle order not being that great. He held it together, and you know, he did what I think Tamim had intended to do, and saw the game home in a very sort of, actually I think calm's the word, and that's synonymous with, I guess, New Zealand as a cricket team. Even when Williamson is playing, they're so calm about it and so friendly about it. You can't help but be happy for them. And yeah, he was gifted a reprieve with the drop catches. But he moved on. But even like, you know, when they were sort of, when they were fielding, his, you know, the handling over the I can't remember what it's called, the kind of, the, I guess, catch. The catch, the non-catch even.
Catch never was, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of think if that was on the other foot, the Bangladeshi would be so emotionally aggrieved by it, it would throw their concentration for the rest of the game. But it's the complete opposite with that side. And I think that comes from the leadership. And so I think for Tom Latham, just job done, really. Yeah, job done. Really, really could have impressed by him. Very impressed by him.
Yeah, it was certainly a superb sort of captain's performance, and more than deserved the Man of the Match award for it. And like you say, all the more because of the absence of not only Kane Williamson, but Ross Taylor as well, which does create quite a big hole in that sort of New Zealand middle order. But he certainly stepped up today and kind of filled those shoes for New Zealand admirably. Okay, so let's throw things forward then to the last game, or to the next game, the last game of the ODI series. Bangladesh obviously already lost the series now, 2-0. What are your thoughts in terms of that last game? Obviously now with the World Cup qualification points at stake, it's not a dead rubber, so it's still of vital importance. What kind of changes would you like to see Bangladesh make, if any? What kind of changes?
Yeah. Do you know, honestly, I think actually no changes. I think today was the right lineup. And actually, like I say, we should have won the game. We put enough runs on the board. I think bar three overs between 36 and 38, we largely bowled well. For me, I was pleased to see runs scored at number three for the first time in a long time. I think Sarkar's 32 was probably the highest score for a number three batsman playing one day for Bangladesh for some time. I've also been very impressed by our paces. I know they didn't, you know, Tuscan didn't take any wickets today, but only two bowlers actually did. But you know, the paces have sort of come of age, and with Tuscan in particular, I'm quite sympathetic of his sort of almost redemption story. I guess if I was forced to make one, I'd maybe say Hassan Mahmud coming back in for dinner, because he didn't really contribute so much to kind of almost, you know, definitely have his name out on paper. But no wholesale changes for me, I think. I think, you know, we should have won today, and we lost because of silly errors, not because of poor performance. Well, it was a poor performance, but one that could have been easily avoided. How about yourself? Do you think?
I wouldn't like to see any sort of wholesale changes, like you say. I guess slightly concerning, Litton Das hasn't had the best time of it recently, although I'm a huge fan and admirer of his, so I wouldn't jettison him just yet, although undoubtedly there probably will be lots of people sort of calling for exactly that. The other thing that was slightly concerning, I saw Mustafiz limping off towards the end of the game. I'm hoping he's injury free. I know he has had his sort of injury issues in the past, but fingers crossed that that he comes out of it okay. Yeah, I guess like you, I think for that next game, there are certainly a couple of things that they can improve on and certainly learn from, I think. And yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more intent, I'd say, with the batting up front and trying to, you know, not necessarily settle for a kind of reasonable decent part, but try to aspire to that sort of 300 plus kind of total, even if they don't sort of necessarily get there. But yeah, great having you on, Roshan, because one of the things I always like is you're so positive most of the time about Bangladesh cricket, whereas I'm probably more glass half empty. So it's always great sort of talking to you to get that kind of different perspective on things.
It's all going to be fine, isn't it?
Well, Roshan, it's been fantastic having you on, and I'm sure we're going to be talking again before the end of this series, and no doubt in the not too distant future. Thanks again.
No, thank you very much for having me on, and I look forward to another sort of sleepless night as we watch Bangladesh go for their first win in New Zealand.
Great, can't wait for that, and thanks everyone for watching, and see you next time. Bye for now.